ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Thursday, August 8th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. As always, how you doing today, Dwayne?
I'm doing well. Got that Voyageurs Cup fever. It's calming down and then I'll flare up again in a week or so.
So do you need some Advil or something? What's the remedy for that fever?
I don't know if there is one. Maybe I need like some kind of EpiPen or something, like stab it into my leg. That might be the only escape from the V-cup fever.
That's where I would stab it. The leg, sure. Today on Soccer Today, of course, we're going to talk about the Canadian Championship game last night. We're going to talk about them a little later in the show. We also have some thoughts on new designated player for the future in LA, in the Galaxy LA. We'll talk about this in the middle of the show. But to start the show, yesterday, deadline day, in Major League Soccer for outside of the league transfers. And the Montreal Impact made kind of a splash yesterday. Bojan Krcic was rumored for a long time, and he was been in town since Monday, so we knew that was going to happen. But Balu Tabla, the young Canadian international, making a return to the Montreal Impact on loan from FC Barcelona B. He was on loan before that to Albacete, never really played a lot in Albacete, and Barcelona B didn't really play this year too. Barcelona B got relegated to La Liga 3 pretty much last year, or for this year, and Balu has been struggling in his transition and is finding playing time, and now he's back with the Montreal Impact until the end of the season. There's 9 games left in the regular season. That was what surprised me yesterday. Of course, Bojan is interesting, and Azira is gone for the Montreal Impact. He's been traded to Chicago for Jorge Corrales, and what was the number one allocation order? To bring in Balu with the Impact, because Balu goes into the same vein as a U.S. men's national team player that gets transferred out. When he comes back in to get back his rights, you do have to go through the allocation order, and Montreal did so by trading Michael Azira to Chicago with Jorge Corrales as well, a left back coming to Montreal, and that top spot of the allocation. So, 3 big moves for the Montreal Impact yesterday. Bojan, Balu, and we do have as well Corrales coming in as a depth left back.
Yeah, and we talked about Bojan yesterday, so you can sort of listen to our take on that if you want to go back in the archives. But Balu coming back, look, there's a lot of thoughts go through my mind when I hear this. And the first thought is that, you know, from a Montreal Impact perspective, obviously he was a fairly impactful player in what he was when he left, but he was more potential than reality.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And he's coming back without really knowing, we really don't know where he's at anymore. But I think from a Balu standpoint, as much as we all loved having that Barcelona name on the Canadian men's national team lineup.
Yeah.
The reality is that it didn't really work out. And
not yet.
I've talked to people over there, and they've suggested that maybe it was a fit issue more than a talent issue, that he doesn't really play the Barca way, and that wasn't necessarily his best fit. And hopefully this coming back to Montreal, and I suspect he's done at Barcelona, to be honest with you, right? And that's okay. I don't at all blame him, and I would never ever suggest that he shouldn't have done that. And I know there's a lot of Canadian fans out there, and I get frustrated with this way. I see it with Davies as well, that like, oh, you got to go somewhere lower where you'll play. And no, to me, you go and you try. And if you don't break through, then you reset and you go again. And coming back to Montreal, to me, for that player, is an opportunity to come somewhere where he's comfortable, come back somewhere where he knows. Yeah. Back somewhere where maybe he can reset and find his way to his next journey, because he has a lot of talent. And I do think there is somewhere in Europe where he can fit in and get the time that he needs. Maybe Spain's not the right answer for him,
sure.
Right?
We'll know more today. Unfortunately, because of our live show, I won't be able to make it to the press conference that is happening around 11:30 at the training center with Boyan and Balu. I tried last night to get some answers out of Rimigal to comment Balu's coming back with the Montreal Impact, but it will be talked about today in the press conference. So after the show, it'll be time for the press conference of the Montreal Impact. You'll be able to listen to the press conference wherever, usually on Impact's website or on YouTube and TV Sport and stuff. But it is, I think, interesting as well for a player, the timing. It's August 8th. It was his last day that he could come to Major League Soccer with the Montreal Impact. It was becoming late in the offseason, too. Leagues are coming. La Liga's starting. Premier League starting in 2 days. And same would have been said to teams that could have potentially been a new home for Balu on loan. He was looking for a place. He was in Montreal for a few weeks, spending the summer here. That's what I heard. So all those things coming together, be like, look, okay, Barcelona's open to sending me on loan again. Maybe even to you guys. The Impact, like, wow, we need players. We need attacking players. We need young players that the fans can gravitate towards too. And maybe players for the future. Why not come back home? And all those little details goes quickly. Calls are made. Okay, what do we need? We need to find a way to fit him in the salary cap. Okay, Omar Brownie, we're going to announce it maybe later today or in the next few days, but you're gone. Novillo gone. That does save some space. There's the Boyan aspect. There's some TAM money included with the Michael Azira trade, which, by the way, Michael Azira for an allocation top spot, $50,000 of allocation that gave Montreal that top spot, and Jorge Corrales, I have to say, it's a heck of a trade once again. The Montreal Impact and their trades over the last couple of years got a lot of value for players that we didn't think had that amount of value. No offense to Azira, class act gentleman. Last night, made sure to thank the reporters and journalists and everyone in the Montreal Impact staff during the game for the way they treated him while he was here. And he made sure that he really talked to the fans, too. His whole family followed Michael Azira to Montreal, Dwayne. And I have to say, his entire family was really cute and really fun to see. Coming to every game, dressed with all the jerseys of the Impact, wearing number 32 of Azira, saying Daddy in the back instead of Azira. It was very cute, and they were involved in the life of the stadium post-game with families of players. And he's going to be missed. He was a great guy. But what Montreal got for him is, well, a steal. So the whole day, I was like, wow, is there something more? And then I got to the stadium last night, Dwayne. I looked at the communication director like, is this it? Is there more things to come? He's like, well, don't forget, the roster freeze is only at the end of the month. So there's still some things that could happen, but not today. So, no, overall, a very exciting day. And I do feel for Balu, it's a chance for him to rediscover the love of playing well. And not necessarily the pressure of developing quickly, but maybe find again what made him a player with a lot of potential in an environment that he's comfortable. I wouldn't be surprised if that culture shock going to Spain was one of the reasons why it hasn't been that easy for Balu.
No, sure. I mean, you know, a couple thoughts. An allocation trade this time of the season, like if you don't have anything lined up, if you're Chicago, you take what you can get, really, right? If they're not bringing anyone in, that spot's basically useless. Well, it's useless today. Doesn't matter anymore, right? So you might as well get something for it. So Montreal did a good job in waiting to the end to get that so that they wouldn't have to overpay for it. Look. Everyone's cheering for this kid to reach his potential, and it was kind of frustrating, I think, from a perspective here over the last little while to look at him struggling over there to get time. We all had high hopes when he went, but, you know, things happen. And again, to reiterate it, I think it's great that he went over and he tried, and he tried to battle for a place in, you know, the most famous club in the world, 1-1-A, 1-B, I don't, like, right yeah. there, right? Like, yeah, it's remarkable.
I think we're easy to judge sometime in sports where you're either the best, the world champion, or you're not working hard enough. You're not good enough. We're seeing this the whole world, like, backwards. For me, I oftentimes, to put things in perspective, you substitute the word sport and the word superstar or athlete by, I don't know, teacher, doctor, librarian, whichever the case may be, a blue-collar job, a regular job. And then you try to assess and find examples. Okay, so example. I'm someone who's beginning in the corporate world. I'm a young, not even VP, I'm a young assistant somewhere. And I think I'm doing good, but I think I have the potential to go to what would be Europe in the corporate world. So, yay, Google's coming for me. So, should I go try? They're offering me like a very small paid internship, but they're offering me an opportunity. If you go, you try it out, and they only keep one out of 20, maybe two out of 20 is going to become very big VPs or the next very important player in Google. Well, it doesn't make out. It doesn't work out. And eventually you decide to go back to where you were and to continue your progression at the job you were before. It's not seen the same way as in sports, right? It wouldn't be seen as much as a failure. It would have been seen as, look, he went to a place that he didn't know. He tried. He worked hard. He tried his best. It was not just about him. There's other things too. But it didn't work out. And now he's continuing his career path in a different environment. So it does put things in perspective sometimes when you take the sport aspect and you analyze this as someone's career in another job and you're trying to correlate the situation. It sometimes takes the oh, they're paid millions, they should do better, out of the equation.
Yeah, I'll give you another analogy, a soccer analogy here. Like, if you're a Canadian national team fan listening to this, that's sad that he's coming back to Major League Soccer, would you be frustrated if Ballou turned into Victor Vasquez? Because Victor Vasquez also failed to break into Barcelona, found his way to becoming a really quite remarkable player, right? So there's lots of paths. And when you're talking about in this sport, Barca, Real Madrid, like the big seven or eight clubs in the world, like, they're at a level that is so beyond our comprehension that it is no shame to not be able to break in at those clubs, right? And if they can reset and become a star, and, you know, hell, I think we'd all, any Canadian national, if Ballou is as good as Victor Vasquez in 2026, game on.
Right? We're going to win a game in the World Cup, never mind qualifying or playing in it. But no, that's what I think too. An example, we often forget, and with the Canadian Premier League, we're going to see those players. The American lifers, or the Canadian lifer, the guy who plays his entire career in the USL as the veteran leader, the Christian Volesky of this world. I don't know if that name rings a bell. USL, NASL and USL, famous player over the last 5 years, used to score a ton of goals back in the day versus the Impact in the A-League and stuff like that. But that type of player, versus FC Montreal especially, when you have players like that, it's a worthy career. Make between $50,000 and $100,000 playing soccer on a professional level. If you're in the USL, mostly professional level, depending on who you're playing with, and you work in a community, you become an important part of your community. You teach people soccer. It's a worthy career, and sometimes it's not about just being the number one striker for the number one team in the world and winning the World Cup and winning the trophy and winning MLS Cup. And yeah, that's great. That's great. But look at the amount of trophies in the world. Look at the amount of teams. And it would be interesting to see the percentage of teams that actually wins trophies every year. It's not just about winning trophy. Sometimes it's about just the game itself and being in the... So, yeah. So, I do feel Ballou has a chance here. And by the way, the way it's structured, the deal, if Ballou is with the Montreal Impact next year, so in CBA terms, if the player that you acquire using your allocation spot is still with the Impact on an MLS contract in 2020, the Impact will have to pay $75,000 more of GAM to the Chicago Fire as a compensation. So there's a possibility already that Ballou could be with the Impact next year. And for me, that's more the interesting aspect. There's 9 games left in the regular seasons, and I don't even know if Ballou is able to play, eligible to play for the Canadian Championship, not being part of the 23-man roster a few months ago. So, a lot of questions. And if you're Ballou, you got 9 games to prove yourself or jumpstart your beginning of the rest of your career after the failed Barca experiment. And what better place to restart that career than the place that it actually began to?
You still can't. He's absolutely still a kid.
Yes, he's 20.
Yeah, look, I think it's very likely that he's back with the Impact next year. I think that that's what this is about. And at 20, he plays these 9 games, plays next year, 21. At the end of it, maybe makes a move again. And hell, the Impact, by buying him back, can get more allocation for more transfer for him if they call him again.
Because they sold him before Alphonso Davies, right? So before we knew we could get big money for Canadian players. If the Impact would have kept him, example, over the last 2 years, he would have played a lot, scored a lot, a la Davies, maybe he would have been sold for a lot more. It was his decision. He wanted to go as soon as the big lights, the big stage was calling, even though it wasn't the big stage and the big lights. It was the antechamber of the big stage and the big lights, and never crossed that bridge, I guess, to the big show. But now it is another opportunity for Ballou to be about the soccer, not to be about anything else. Comes back where a place where he can play soccer. And for me, I can't wait to see him play if he does. On maybe not Saturday, maybe next Wednesday will be difficult because of his eligibility in the Canadian Championship game. It still needs to be seen if he's going to be available. But the game after, Ballou and Boyan will be playing.
Yeah, look, at this point in time, he went over, he trained with him, and I think there's a lot of value in training in that environment for a couple of years. And I think when I look at Alphonso Davies this year and I watch his play, I can see remarkable improvement in his game in a year, even though he didn't play a lot last year. So I think that what that is him training day in, day out with world-class players at Byron, right? Same thing with Ballou. Not so much when he went on loan, but for sure when he was at Barca, he was getting... Even second team, they would have been training with the first team all the time, and that would have been a really unique situation for a teenager to experience. And now he's going to come back, and what he needs right now in his career, though, is to play week in, week out, grind it out, get the minutes in, figure it out. Whenever I'm comparing him, like it's hard not to compare him to Davies because they both left similar, they both went to big clubs, you know what I mean? Like, so it's hard not to do this comparison. When Davies went, I have been very adamant in that he should absolutely be at Byron, absolutely battling to get his time, absolutely should not be on loan right now. And I know there are a lot of Canadians who disagree with that, want him to go to, you know, a lower level. Hell, I've heard people say B2 teams, which is insane to me that he'd want him to drop that far down. But anyway, if in a year, though, he's still not playing, then absolutely have this conversation with me again about him getting playing time, because there comes a point where the training benefit is going to hit a ceiling and you need to start putting that into play. And I think Ballou, based on his very limited playing time, and it wasn't so much at Barca, when he went on loan and he still wasn't getting time, that's when it's like, okay, this has got to be something that he needs somewhere else. And look, the Spanish teams have no incentive to play him.
No, he's not Spanish. It's not like he's a big name or a big rookie like a Davies that comes with a big price tag that you're like, okay, we got to play him because we paid $20 million for him. So we kind of have to make our money's worth. But in the Ballou case, it wasn't the case. In the Ballou case, it was more like when it's $1 million or $2 million, it's pretty much just for show. It's not like a real transfer. It's like, okay, what's the price tag? Okay, $1 million. So change. Let me get my change in the bottom of my pocket. Okay, here you go. We can do the transfer. So there's that aspect. And you're right. The Davies aspect, when you spend $20 million on a prospect, there is some pressure from the fan base. Be like, oh, well, is that prospect good enough? We want to see him play. $1 million? It's like, no. Fans were not even interested about that move. So we'll see in the future how that move turns out for Ballou, for the Impact, and Boyan as well. There's a Barcelona file now with the Montreal Impact, with Boyan trained at La Masia, and also with Ballou. 4.5 years at La Masia school. So that will be important to see in the future for the Impact, for their push for the playoffs. But last night in the Canadian Championship, the Impact barely got by, but they did get by 2-1 versus Cavalry FC. Dwayne, for our Patreon listeners, for supporters out there, you will have an exclusive interview with Tommy Weldon Jr., Iggy Miguel, and Mason Trafford post-game with James Pantemis, and then also Samuel Piet on our Patreon feed. So the raw audio that I collected last night will be available for Patreon listeners on our Patreon feed later today at patreon.com/sportsmindcastingnetwork. About 50 minutes of audio, unedited, with a great conversation with Tommy Weldon Jr. after the game. But great game for Montreal. Great game for Cavalry. Cavalry felt good because of their away goal, Dwayne. And if Cavalry did not gift Montreal the first game, the first goal, by giving the ball to Piatti and then Piatti all alone in front of the Cavalry goalkeeper, could have been anybody. But no, you have to give it to Piatti all alone. But that's where Tommy Wilden Jr., coach of Cavalry, was really not mad, but like, we didn't need to gift him a goal. Anybody but Piatti, it is what it is, but they're happy with their goal.
No, 100%. I mean, you know, I think I said to you off air that they're playing with house money at this point, and it's a fair way to put it. Calgary, anything they do in this tie is going to be considered amazing. And the fact they got an away goal and still are in with a chance to win at home. Look, if I'm not on a bus heading to Montreal on September, 18th or something, I'll be pretty surprised. But nonetheless, the fact that Calgary still is in with a chance, you know, Montreal has to show up. Montreal is going to have to play a serious lineup out there. And that, in many, many ways, is a victory onto itself for the Campiel, which is proven, I think, without a doubt, that they are, you know, particularly Cavalry is a very legitimate team that you're going to have to take seriously. I'm sure Remy Gard is absolutely taking that seriously at this point.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Impact players are absolutely taking it seriously, right?
You mentioned Remy Gard, and I think it's important that we noticed that we mentioned that. After the game, he mentioned that he went to talk to Tommy Wilden. And he's like, Coach, what you have done with this team didn't exist a few months ago. What you have done with this team in six months, putting it together, competing and playing, is impressive. An MLS coach told this to a Canadian Premier League coach, like, it's impressive. I like what I see. And Gimignan has been very complimentary towards Canadian Premier League teams so far, York 9 and Cavalry. And they have been surprising in the way they have played versus an MLS team. Like, you look at Montreal Cavalry, Montreal York 9, or an example, Vancouver and Cavalry, two totally different type of matchup. Montreal respected all the Canadian Premier League team they have played against so far with almost the strongest lineup they could, and trying to actually play a game of soccer with them. And I have to say, the CPL team did not look like inferior teams to me over the games. And of course, differences in talent and in depth especially is seen over a period of time. So you play an entire season between Montreal and Cavalry and York 9, and you'll see the disparity at the end of the season in the standings. One off, you never know. And for me, what was interesting, and if you listen to Tommy's comments on our Patreon feed later today, he's talking about the pitch, Dwayne. He's like, this pitch is, first of all, he's like, this stadium is wonderful. It's superb. It's inspiring. It's amazing. And then he's like, the pitch, wow. We don't play on a finely manicured, perfectly pristine pitch that is wet, short, fast. We're not used to it. Like, for my players, it almost felt like playing on a skating rink at the beginning of the week. And then he's like, wait till you come to Calgary. To Cavalry. Spruce Meadows is a bit of a slower field. The grass is longer. It ain't wet. There's no water system. It'll be a different field for the players next week. But for me, that was interesting, that even that aspect, because of the level of infrastructure of Stade Saputo and the pitch, and even though it's not one of the best of the league, there's still a big difference between a Canadian Premier League pitch and a Major League Soccer pitch. For me, the way that the CanPL team, Cavalry, has to adapt to a lot of things in this tournament and still play the way they did last night, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful time for the beautiful game in Canada. I know it's a cop-out to say that right now, but it's true. Like, last night, even the Montreal win wasn't as impressive as the fans would have loved. It was a fun night. It was interesting. And to hear, like, I hope people take a second and listen to Tommy Wilden's interview, post-game comments, because to hear the passion in his voice after losing to an MLS team, but still proud of what the work that his players have put through, yeah, it's what it's all about. And it was a fun time. Another fun Canadian Championship Wednesday at Stade Saputo.
this different game. I was at the first leg of the York 9 Impact game, and when Jim Brennan came in, the question I asked him, I think you'll probably find it somewhere on One Soccer or something. I think they have the post game stuff up there. Was half, I said, literally half empty or half full, and he lit up like, oh my God, it's so half full. Like it's this. I'm so proud of these guys because of the effort they put in. And the Canadian Premier League teams have absolutely shown that they matter and that they are going to add something immensely to this tournament. And look, I believe this will be very much like the U.S. Open Cup, that even though there will be more teams in this, that still the three MLS teams, I'm being, you know, somewhat charitable by including Vancouver and their Voyager Cup history in this, but we'll include them for the sake of it. The three MLS teams will continue to win this more often than not. But
once in a while, like in 1999, the Rochester Rhinos wins the U.S. Open Cup. Maybe once in a while, we'll get a cup set and the Canadian Premier League team will make it all the way to the final. And heck, who knows at that point? And I think that's a beauty. And we still talk about the 99 Rochester Rhinos, even though like we were not at that game. I wasn't watching it, but I heard about it because it is an impressive feat. We'll see. But maybe we should move to the other game last night.
Earlier I said I'll be shocked if I'm not getting up at, getting off the Metro Pinot in a month. I probably was a bit disrespectful for Ottawa for saying that. Well, maybe I'm coming up to watch Ottawa play the Impact. I don't know.
That's true. Yeah. I doubt it. But Toronto FC winning 2-0 last night versus the Ottawa Fury of the USL. Toronto FC with, I'll be generous, with a B lineup, to not say a B minus last night. We still got the job done. Like, you know you're due to win when Drew Moore scores a goal, too.
Nice goal, too. Nice finish, scissor kick. It was a heavy rotation, is the way to put this. And I wasn't surprised by that at all. Toronto very much needs to win on Saturday and looks at Orlando having lost the night before with their first-choice lineup and looks at this as an opportunity to get their squad players, a run out and some of the, both of the new winger DPs, TAM players got a run out as well. So this was a chance to do stuff like that. But, to get a clean sheet, to be able to get a 2-0 win, that endo goal at the end, talk about a stab to the heart, to score in the 90+2 minute to make it 2-0, two road goals, tie over, right? It's very difficult to see how the Ottawa Fury can possibly score two road goals and win the game in Toronto. It doesn't seem very likely. So Toronto has some flexibility there as well. So it was a nice professional win. Ottawa played a part. They certainly had, there was probably a 25-minute stretch in the second half that they were on the front foot. If not for a little bit of bad luck, an inch here, inch there, that maybe they do score a goal, maybe they do manage to get the draw at home, then they're not as open up at the end, and Endo probably doesn't score the goal. That actually surprised me more than anything else, Kevin, was that I don't know why Ottawa was pushing that much forward at the end. You don't want to lose 1-0 at home, but you certainly don't want to lose 2-0 at home, right? And that 2-0 goal almost killed the tie. So it was a professional win. It was a win you'd expect from, the thing about cup sets is that they're so exciting and surprising because they don't happen that much, right?
Yeah.
Usually the better team, the bigger team, the higher level team, usually wins.
Like 90%.
That's kind of what last night was.
Like 90%, if not, of the time. The higher paid team will prevail. And we'll see. Second leg will happen next week, and then the final of the Canadian Championship will be held on September 18th at September 25th, 2019. To finish the show today, Dwayne, yes, there was some deadline transfer move, and some of them will take a few weeks to see how they pan out. But the LA Galaxy have been rumored to get Christian Pavon of Boca for a few weeks now, and then it's all done. But it didn't happen the way we thought it was going to happen. Not just a big transfer for $18 million. No. It's a free loan for now. And he's probably going to be bought in 6 months, in January, to be a DP. But right now he's loaned. and he's on a free trial, on free loan. Is it the first case or one of the first cases of the league alleviating a bit of their rules? And usually it's the Galaxy takes advantage of it. So this time it's the LA Galaxy. The LA Galaxy, the forward-thinking MLS teams that make the rule change. Or does MLS change the rules to accommodate the Galaxy? It's the chicken and the egg conversation. And the chicken and the egg conversation. But for me, Dwayne, it is maybe one of the first instances of the league saying, okay, our rules are weird. And now that we're all the way to 24 teams, and maybe we'll have 100 teams in the league in a few years, maybe it's time that we let teams try to do what they do best and not have rules so hard, like hard rules that you can't. Maybe it's a little, how do you say it, alleviating of the rules a bit for Major League Soccer for roster purposes in the future. Maybe it's the first instance of that.
Oh, well, no, it's not the first instance, because I'm always looking the other way on the rules. But, look, I don't actually blame LA. I think of all the history of the league sort of turning a blind eye towards stuff, this one is actually less egregious than others because they are just using TAM. And when you think about, again, one thing that's important to realize when you're evaluating something like this is that MLS does not have a salary cap. MLS has a salary budget, which means that the only part of his salary that would be counting as cap is what he's paid for the rest of this year. So you can basically make it one third of whatever they signed him for is going to count against the cap. So it makes sense that he's able to be bought down by TAM. Now, if he's still a TAM player and they have three DPs on the roster next year, we'll have words. But
yeah,
basically,
it's basically what they did to Ibrahimovic too when he came in. Like, okay, we can't give him the DP tag because we already have three DPs. And even this year, so I know maybe it's the way to get your DP in without giving him the DP tag before you actually give him the DP tag 6 months after.
Yeah, I mean, look, this isn't the first instance of a team having effectively four DPs. 2017 TFC effectively had four DPs. There's other examples. There's lots of examples of teams getting players on deals that are structured in such a way that they're getting paid below the TAM threshold, but in reality are going to be able to take home more money to allow them to be compensated at a higher level. And I have no problem with teams manipulating the rules. I don't like the rules, so I'm happy with teams bending them. Look, LA in the past, LA, New York, hell, even Toronto in 2014, when they were so bad, MLS has, in my mind, I have no doubt that MLS has absolutely given those teams a little bit of extra advantage that was agreed upon kind of quietly behind closed doors by all teams to help them for the benefit of the whole league. This is a single entity league. And this is the one area where the critics of that model do have a point, that they do stuff like that sometimes where they're like, you know what, let's just change the rules on the fly. Like, hell, David Beckham, they changed the rules on the fly for that, right? And was it for the benefit of the league? Absolutely. This league is much better off as having DPs, and it was because LA pushed the envelope with Beckham that rule came into place. Probably would have eventually anyway, but that's the impetus of what created it. So I'm not going to get all in a huff and conspiracy theorist about the Galaxy doing this again. The Galaxy have consistently over the years shown a willingness to spend on big-name players. There's advantages to that for them. They have won a lot of MLS Cups. They have been very good in the past. They've also been pretty bad in the past, even with high-level spending, because they kind of forget the rest of the roster sometimes. We'll see. I'm not convinced that this is a slam dunk, that he's going to walk in and be a superstar in this league. It's possible. On paper, he's certainly an intriguing prospect. So is Pity. And that hasn't really worked out in the way that people thought it would, because there is an adjustment to come to MLS.
Yeah. Does an adjustment sometimes with your Dutch coach. Never mind Major League Soccer. So that's another problem for another day between Pity and Frank de Boer. But on that note, we'll say goodbye for today. Tomorrow, Friday. Usually it's our weekend preview, but tomorrow, Dwayne, there's something big starting this weekend. But tomorrow, it's our Premier League preview. Hope you're ready. I know it's easier for you. It's like, yeah, we're defending champions, and we're going to be as well favorite for this upcoming season, yes, but who knows? We'll talk about it tomorrow, Dwayne, on our Premier League preview live at around 11 a.m. on our Twitter feed at SoccerTodayESPN. You can follow Dwayne as well on Twitter at 24th Minute and myself at Kev Larme. You like what we do? You want to support us financially with what we do? Make sure you go to patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. $2 a month will go a long way to give us a hand and support the growth of everything we do on SPN and more things as well. Dwayne and I are on show number 978 today of soccer. That's 22 shows to go until show 1000. We want to make a big extravaganza for our show 1000, and we need your help for that. We need your help on patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. Thank you for your support, and until tomorrow for our Premier League preview, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.